They overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Shoot, they score!
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We can put the Crosby score!
Give them 20 minutes a room where they can make you bleed for it, and we did.
If he doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks, no player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien pulls it in!
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
It was the best game he had played, probably by far.
Pop on in front of shot, they score! Patrick Laine! Perfect pass by Kopp! 1-0 Winnipeg!
That release is extraordinary. He gets the puck on and off his stick so fast that you can't find it.
Jets win the draw. Laine is shot. He scores! Patrick Laine with his second of the night.
He doesn't need to be in a shooter's area to score. He really doesn't. He can score from all parts of the ice because he gets it off his stick before the goalie can set on him.
Now Laine, long shot for his third hat trick. He scores! Tonight, the chapeau belongs to Patrick Laine. His third hat trick, 5-2. Winnipeg!
He's such a unique talent. I've had a few Hall of Fame players that I've been on the ice with, and they're just different. Ron Francis is like that. Paul Coffey, who's here tonight, they're just different. We've never had him at that age. This guy's an extraordinary talent.
Patrick Laine's hat trick last night versus Dallas, interspersed with the praise from Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. Last night, the Jets salvage one game in their four-game homestand. They defeat the Dallas Stars by a 5-2 margin. Laine with his third career hat trick, getting the third and final goal into the empty net, sealing the Jets' 5-2 victory.
Le chapeau.
Le chapeau. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, we welcome you to NHL This Week. Drew Mundell, Joel Marcoux, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio for the next 2 hours. You can reach us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. What was a tremendously disappointing road homestand ends on a bit of a high note as the Jets do win 1 out of 4, defeating the Stars by that 5-2 margin last night, guys. I thought the Jets played well. They jump out to that 2-0 lead. Dallas battles back, and then in the third period, Patrick Laine, I mean, that game-winning goal was on and off his stick so quickly. There are really a handful of players in the NHL who can do what he did to give the Jets that game-winning goal last night.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Drew. And everybody's talking about Laine's hat trick, guys, but to me what was most impressive about that play actually wasn't even the shot, which, and you're probably going to say I'm crazy, but I actually was the most impressed by how he lifts Patrick Eves' stick.
Yeah.
After Mark Scheifele wins that faceoff, mm-hmm. And Patrick Laine lifts the stick of Patrick Eves because the puck's kind of
the old pickpocket.
Yeah, it was a pickpocket, Joel, and the puck's kind of bouncing a little bit. Yep. It wasn't what you would call a clean win by Mark Scheifele. He won it, but I thought it was a very nifty play, Drew, by Laine to lift the stick of Patrick Eves. And yeah, absolutely. We know that shot is, if it's not the best shot in the NHL right now, guys, it's a top three shot in the NHL, especially the wrist shot. So Laine, it was nice to see him score for the first time in 6 games. The previous 5 games he hadn't scored. I think he's really struggled with his confidence since he had that concussion in Buffalo. So all in all, a pretty good performance. The first period was ugly, though. I mean, the Jets only had 6 shots, and I thought it was just a really slow kind of start to the game in general, but an impressive game. It's one of those 4-point games, and even though the Jets' chances of making the playoffs are really slim right now, Joel.
What are the odds right now?
They're still only 4 points back, and I realize the Kings have games in hand, but
yeah.
Still, they're still fighting at this point in the season. So, you know, the fans leave happy. They hadn't won the previous 5 games at home, and overall it was a great finish to the game. Wasn't the best start, but they made sure that they finished strong.
Yeah, what did they cross off? That was their first win in, 6 at home. They snapped the 4-game skid. First time in 16 games that they allow fewer than 3 goals. I mean, that's the impressive part, just based on the template we've seen them establish in the new year, that they just can't keep the puck out of their own net, mm-hmm. whether it's through bad defensive play or spotty, you know, net mining.
Even when it was 5-2, I was expecting the Dallas Stars were going to get a cheapie just to keep that streak alive.
Yeah, how many times have we seen them explode in third period like that, you know, after squandering the 2-0 lead? So that was impressive as well. But, I mean, let's face it, let's not separate the shoulders, patting ourselves on the back for that one, as Claude Noel would say, because the Dallas Stars are not really an impressive team right now. That team is a tire fire in the making based on what we've seen the last couple of weeks. Not sure what's going on there. They're kind of at the deadline. They may unload a few pieces.
I think they have to.
Yeah. And, it's nice to end on a winning streak like that, but I think people just really cared about the line of goals. Other than that, I mean,
well, no, it's still a tremendously disappointing homestand. I mean, you can't sugarcoat. I mean, this is the homestand that I think. It didn't maybe cost the Jets a playoff spot, but it definitely sealed their fate as not being a playoff team.
You go 4 in a row?
Exactly. That's you had an opportunity, and it's now a missed opportunity by losing those first three. So once you've lost those first three, whatever happens in that game last night is almost irrelevant to some extent.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yes, they feel better about themselves because they won, but it doesn't put any lipstick on what was a pig of a homestand all in all.
No, I mean, when you lose games to Tampa Bay, Chicago, and Minnesota in a row, and you only end up with 2 points out of a possible 8, Drew, I agree with you. You know, Joel, you mentioned the goaltending, and it's funny. You know, Connor Hellebuck makes 34 saves. I thought he was really sharp in the first period. He made that save on Jamie Benn from basically right at the top of the circle there in the slot, and then he made a save towards the end of the first period on John Klingberg. Mm-hmm. I just thought he looked big in the net, and I realize that's a cliche, but I thought he was aggressive, and I thought he was just solid overall. And what was kind of bizarre about Hellebuck's performance is the goals that Benn and Sagan scored in the second were kind of quote-unquote weaker goals, especially Sagan's goal, which you could argue that he was screened on, Drew. But, I mean, Hellebuck was excellent there, especially, you know, when the Jets were killing penalties in the first and third period. Just overall, he had a very solid game. And as Joel mentioned, you know, the Jets have been giving up 3 goals or more pretty much every game now for the last month and a half. So overall, it was a pretty solid performance. Now, Patrick Sharp hits a couple crossbars there, guys. So, I mean, you know, you got a little bit lucky. And Hellebuck after the game was saying, you know, well, that was all me. That was all positioning, kind of joking, right? But, I mean, he was pretty solid. And we know that, you know, Andre Pavlik took over there for a little bit. So I think that's a big win for Hellebuck.
I mean, let's be honest. What you had last night was a game between two bad teams this year.
Yeah.
Two teams that aren't going anywhere. I mean, you know, the Dallas Stars are one of the probably the most disappointing team in the NHL. Them and Tampa Bay are you know, neck and neck with who's the most disappointing this season. And the Stars they looked bad. They looked, you know, they looked bad. The Jets, I mean, the Jets, we know what they are. We've seen them now for 58 games. We know what they are. They're going to win some games. They're going to lose more games. They're going to be woefully inconsistent, and they're likely going to miss the playoffs as a result. I mean, we're going to talk about the Pittsburgh game because we'll preview the Pittsburgh game that's coming up tomorrow. I will be stunned if this Jets' next 4 games on the road before they have their bye week, I'll be stunned if these next 4 games are positive for the Jets. I just don't. I think that you win last night because you play a bad team. The next 4 games are all against playoff teams. Bigger step up.
Yeah, and there's a storyline linked to each of these games, right? I mean, tomorrow night you have Sidney Crosby looking for 1,000. You know, Montreal, you got a brand new bench boss there. You got Toronto, that's going to be an absolute circus with all the young guys, you know, soaking up the spotlight. Marner, Matthews.
Yeah.
And then Ottawa, I mean, they're still kind of in the same situation, in a better situation than the Jets, but they need to grab the W's to stay in the race. And they're playing some decent hockey, too, right now. So none of these are tap-ins. I mean, no game is a tap-in when you're the Jets. But, you know, just going back to how they finished, Drew, and just one thought on this one.
Yeah.
How bad was that Lightning game on Saturday?
Wow.
I mean, that even after what they did last night,
I was pretty vocal about that on Saturday's postgame show. I had the maybe I'm the bad luck, but I had the opportunity to be on with Rick, and I didn't mince any words. That was atrocious on Saturday night. I mean, you can't.
Is that the worst game of the year?
Oh yeah, that's the worst game. That might have been the worst game since the Columbus game that got Claude Noel fired.
Like, that was just awful.
Yeah. That was the Saturday night game against the Tampa Bay Lightning was a game that you can't just wash away. It lingers. That's how bad it was. It lingers on the team. It lingers over the club. This isn't a game you just, you know, chalk up to a lousy performance. Back earlier in the year, that game against Boston.
Oh.
You could
dozen shots.
You could chalk that up to a bad timing, a collection of everything working against you. That game on Saturday against the Lightning was just a team that did not show up from top to bottom.
And I think that's why it was surprising how the Jets played in that first period. I mean, we talked about it before. Line A scores that goal towards the end of the first period. Mm-hmm. The Jets had 5 shots on net.
Well,
but I think it really showed how they finished the game that I think these guys are sick of losing.
Maybe they weren't ready to play.
Well, and
how many times have we heard that robotic line?
And it's tough to know, right? I mean, you're never going to hear a coach or anybody in the dressing room say that, but I agree with you guys. I mean, the effort against Tampa Bay was arguably, as you said, Drew, I'm not going to argue with you here.
Pathetic.
Was one of the worst performances of the season. You can throw in, you know, 3 or 4 other games, but, you know, we talked about it 3 weeks ago when the Jets went on that road trip at the end of January, early February, when they were playing teams like Chicago, St. Louis, Dallas. They won 3 of 4 games. It was the game against Colorado that they lost on back on February 4th.
That Saturday afternoon game where,
right.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the disappointing one. So, I mean, do they have a great shot at making the playoffs? Absolutely not. But they have 4 games coming up here. And whatever slim hopes that they have of making the playoffs, they can do something about it. If they can pick up, 3 of 4 wins here.
You're right. You're right.
Saying,
you are statistically and mathematically, you are correct.
Well, if they go on a Hamburglar type heater, right?
Yeah, but there's been no evidence. There's nothing to say that they have anything in them beyond winning a game here, a game there, maybe 2 in a row.
And that's partly me just, you know, trying to be the eternal optimist.
You are
right?
You do look at the sunny side of things.
I do. And when you look at who they're playing, I agree with Joel. I mean, you're going to face a Pittsburgh team right now that I think is if they're not.
Anybody not think Crosby gets at least 1,000 tomorrow? Anybody at all? I want to meet the person who thinks that Crosby doesn't get his 1,000th point against the Jets
and also,
tomorrow.
I mean, if you want to be, you know, play the other side of the coin and be the pessimist, the Jets have not been good against the Eastern Conference this year.
The Jets have been awful in Pittsburgh since they've returned.
So I mean, they're not going to be easy games.
7-13-2 against the East.
Crosby might get 1,010 points tomorrow against the Jets.
Yeah, and if that happens, well, then spin the wheel of excuses, right? You know, the road or their goalie was good or, you know, all this kind of stuff that we've heard robotically spewed out all year after a loss instead of just owning it.
If you fall asleep, Joel, for 2 minutes, Pittsburgh will put 2 goals in the back of the net. This team might be the best offensive team in the league. I'm not talking about, you know, the stats, goals for and all that. I'm just talking about, you know, when you look at, you know, Malkin just came back after missing 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He scored last night against Vancouver. I mean, this is a team that I wouldn't be surprised if they repeat this year.
Well, I'll tell you what. The Pittsburgh Penguins currently lead the entire NHL in goals for with 197.
Right. Yeah.
I would be surprised if they don't crack the 200 mark tomorrow against the Winnipeg Jets.
They have 6 regulation losses in their last 32. I mean, and their blue line was depleted. They've had some guys out. I mean, they just kind of they bring up some guys from the A, and they just keep rocking and rolling. And this team is they're looking to go back to the Cup final and back to back years like they did back in 2008-09.
And it's funny, Joel. People are talking about, you know, the Penguins and what they might do at the trade deadline. Why do you have to do anything? I mean, if I'm Jim Rutherford, why do you even have to make a single move?
I mean, you're right.
Maybe a depth blue liner.
Sure, you know, I mean
something that doesn't really cost them overwhelming amount of an asset.
Minor moves,
you know, like what the Capitals did earlier today to get Tom Gilbert from Los Angeles, which I think is give up if they win 2 rounds and he plays 20% of the games or something. It's a 5th round pick in 2020,
and plus that frees up a little bit of cash for the Kings if they want to go acquire a player for forward for the
exactly
run or something like that.
Something like that. You wouldn't. I mean, there's talk. You know, and we'll talk more about the trade deadline coming up later in the show, but there was some chatter about maybe Matt Duchene going to Pittsburgh. Well, what's Matt Duchene going to cost the Penguins? I don't know that is a move that, sure, on paper it works, but is it really necessary?
And can they protect him?
Another good question. And I haven't looked closely enough, but it's hard to believe that they would be able to.
Yeah.
In any event, much more on the Jets. We'll preview the Jets and the Penguins coming up this hour, but when we come back, we discuss another coach firing in the NHL. Michel Therrien is out in Montreal. Claude Julien is in. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And I felt right away that Claude was a good man, a man of integrity, and again, his track record speaks for itself. He's been here before as a rookie coach. He left, won a Stanley Cup in Boston, almost 10 years or 10 years in Boston, so he learned a lot. He's Montreal, as we all know, it's a tough market, but coming back here, just like Michel did, and Michel did very well after he came back the second time around, so there's no doubt my mind will be the same with Claude.
Montreal Canadiens general manager Marc Bergevin discussing the Montreal Canadiens' decision, his decision to relieve Michel Therrien as head coach, hire Claude Julien for 5 years, I think $5 million per season, a nice payday for the former head coach of the Boston Bruins, who now returns to the Montreal Canadiens yet again for the first time since he was fired back in 2003. And of course, back then, he replaced a guy named Michel Therrien. So things do come full
only
circle,
Montreal.
Only in Montreal. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Yeah, it was a bad Valentine's Day for Michel Therrien.
Heartbreak.
It certainly was. And a lot of people who maybe don't follow the NHL that closely or don't follow the Montreal Canadiens that closely will look at the standings and say, whoa, Montreal Canadiens are first in the Atlantic Division. 31-19-8. They've had a tremendous year. They're great. How could you go and fire your coach at that point in time? And then you peel back one layer of that onion, and you look and you say that, oh, well, boy, the Montreal Canadiens started the season, 13-1-1, if I'm not mistaken? And since then, the Canadiens are 18-18-7. So, peel back that one layer and look, oh, this Montreal Canadiens team has really been struggling for much of the past, let's say, 3 months, 2.5 months, and Marc Bergevin looks around. He looks at who's available, and he says, oh, Claude Julien is now available. French-speaking, French-Canadian, Stanley Cup-winning coach. I got to get that guy on my team. All due respect to Michel Therrien.
Even though he said today that Claude Julien being available had nothing to do with the dismissal of Michel Therrien.
Okay.
Right? Uh-huh. Exactly. Throw that in the, category. You know, it's interesting because, we talked about it a little bit in the previous segment about net mining, how net mining can place a facade and sometimes cover up, a team's
weaknesses.
Issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
If Carey Price is still Carey Price, because we all know he's been struggling in the last handful of weeks, does Michel Therrien get fired?
Well, Carey Price's struggles are certainly linked to this because the Montreal Canadiens are only going to go as far as Carey Price takes them.
Of course.
And so with Carey Price struggling and no one's been able to quite figure out what the issue is with Carey Price because he certainly doesn't look like himself.
No.
Michel Therrien, if Carey Price is playing like Carey Price, Michel Therrien's probably safe. The question will be, can Claude Julien and his presence flip something to get Carey Price back into the form you'd expect from that Habs goaltender?
I mean, a lot of what's going on with Carey Price is PK, save percentage. He's one of the worst goalies in the league with the PK save percentage. 5-on-5, he's still not that bad, but on the PK, for whatever reason, he's that bad. Now, does he forget how to play in goal when they're on the PK? I don't think so. So clearly there's some systematic issues there, which then would be directly correlated to coaching. That being said, it takes us back to, the net mining. If the goalie was better and they'd be winning more games, who knows where the Habs would be right now if they would have made this coaching change. Tell you what, Julien is pretty darn systematic, and it starts from the goalie defense, and then it goes to the forwards. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't have a long time to establish any of this right now. With the season already in the back nine, you can't change too many things.
No,
otherwise, you're going to maybe make it fall off the cliff.
You can't, but I mean, he comes in at a pretty good opportunity, I think. The Habs are in the midst of their bye week, so he now can sit back and spend the next, they play the Jets on Saturday. That's their first game back from the bye. And he can now spend the next 4 days or so looking at the team, watching a lot of video of the team and evaluating to see why has this team been struggling for much of the last few months. I mean, it's not a guarantee that Claude Julien turns them around by any stretch, but I'd be more willing to bet that he fixes what ails them than the problems continue.
You know what this reminds me a little bit of, guys, and there is a Montreal Canadiens connection here, if you go back almost 17 years, this reminds me of back in March 2000 when the New Jersey Devils fired Robbie Fatorik.
Yeah.
And they hired Larry Robinson. That's the connection, former Montreal Canadiens defenseman and, of course, a Hall of Famer.
Sure.
And
Big Three.
The Devils went on to win the Stanley Cup that year. And I'm not saying that the Montreal Canadiens are going to win the Stanley Cup, but I think there are parallels there when you talk about the timing and the fact that, as you mentioned, Drew, the Montreal Canadiens are leading the division,
mm-hmm.
and that division's horrible, by the way.
It's like the old Southeast.
I mean, the Metropolitan Division, we've talked about that quite a bit on the Saturday show, mm-hmm. and the Metro Division has finally overtaken the Central Division as the top division in the league, and that's partly due to the fact that you have the Columbus Blue Jackets finally fulfilling their potential.
Sure.
But when you look at, you know, Michel Therrien, and, you know, there were question marks about whether or not Michel Therrien would be back next year when you're looking at, you know, where we were in the offseason,
mm-hmm.
and Marc Bergevin gave him the vote of confidence and then traded P.K. Subban. I'm not saying that it was necessarily P.K. Subban versus Michel Therrien, but in the year of the fired coach is what this year is turning into, and you look at where the Montreal Canadiens are. Joel talks about Carey Price and how he struggled with his P.K. save percentage because his numbers actually aren't that bad, Drew, but you mentioned the Habs started the season 13-1-1.
Yeah.
And they've basically been a 500 hockey team for the last 3 months.
500 points percentage, not even right. 500 winning percentage.
Right.
Yeah. And, yeah.
You know, the acquisitions that Marc Bergevin made have actually turned out pretty well. And I realize Shea Weber's cooled down a little bit, but Alexander Radulov has been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew Shaw's missed some time due to injury, but he's been pretty good. But after
when
Max.
He's not slew footing people.
Right. After Max Pacioretty and Alexander Radulov, look at the drop off in points.
Sure.
I mean, the Habs are not getting balanced scoring.
Well, and when they were going well, they were getting you know, crucial goals by, like, Paul Byron,
right.
you know, started off
yes.
the season.
And
you're one of six, right?
And Joel, Philip Deneau's had a good year for the Habs. But what we're talking about here is the same thing we've been talking about, and the reason why the Habs haven't got past that first round, second round hump in so many years, it's because they don't have the depth that other teams have. When you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Washington Capitals, they have 7, 8, 9 guys that can put the puck in the net.
Right.
Aside from Pacioretty and Radulov,
yes.
who are you getting the goals from? And I think one of the main reasons why he was fired as well is Alex Galchenyuk and Brendan Gallagher have struggled big time this year, and I realize that both of those guys have missed some time. Galchenyuk's missed a few more games than Brendan Gallagher, but Galchenyuk's got 29 points in 37 games, but this is a guy that they thought would be a point-per-game player for them.
Sure.
He was drafted third overall, right? So for me, it's the way that they're not scoring here, and I still think this Montreal Canadiens team is a good team, but when you look at some of the other teams in the East, and you can throw in the Rangers,
they're not
in there,
beating anybody that comes out of the Metropolitan.
I think they're a pretty mediocre team.
Yeah, well, they're fortunate that they're playing in the Atlantic Division because, I mean, whoever comes out of the Atlantic Division is just going to be fodder. I mean, they're going to be whoever comes out of the Metropolitan is going to take them on pretty easily. I think the Metropolitan Division is the Eastern Conference representative in the Stanley Cup, barring Carey Price going absolutely nuts again or something.
So did he fall victim to not only the bad goaltending but inept player personnel decisions and not shoring up maybe the center ice position? I mean, they have no thrust down the middle, and that's, you're talking about the lack of depth. Eventually, the same thing happened to them last year when they started 18-4-4.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that Fleischman line, the bottom six, Dale Weiss? I mean, these guys are picking up points from the bottom six, and then eventually that'll catch up to you and it'll taper off, just like the Rangers did this year right out of the gates. Right?
Joel Thomas, Plekanec is another guy. Yeah. Plekanec has 23 points in 58 games.
Yeah,
I mean, this was a guy that was a perennial 60-point guy.
He's towards the end of his career now,
is
what you're clearly seeing there. And you're right, Joel. I mean, you need, when you don't have balanced scoring, which the Habs don't have, you need superstars to carry the weight of your scoring, and the Habs haven't had that this season. And so, yeah, you can probably make an argument that Marc Bergevin, you know, holds some of this, you know, some of the problems here. That's why a guy like Matt Duchene would be so terrific in Montreal.
Yeah.
He solves a lot of their problems, especially, you know, going up the middle and everything. But, you know, Marc Bergevin, is he going? The question is the Claude Julien hire, is that the only move, or are there supplemental moves to come as we approach the trade deadline that really even solidifies this team and addresses some of their on-ice warts that you were just mentioning?
Well, now it is on him for sure. And I mean, for the record, I like this move because I think we all agree that Claude Julien was probably the best coach available.
Yeah.
That being said, now it is on the GM because there's no more excuses. What have we been hearing out of Montreal for the past year plus? It's I don't like this coach. I don't know about this coach. You know, look what he's doing. Look, you know, listen to TSN 690 after a game, and that's all people are talking about is the bad coaching decisions. Now that excuse is out.
Sure.
They have the guy that a lot of people wanted. Now what's the next move? The next move will be on the GM, and time's running out because Carey Price next year is going to be in his last year of his contract, and this core group doesn't have a big window to work with right now, right? So maybe he will make a big splash.
By the way, guys, if you remember, back in March 2000, I keep going back to that year, obviously, because I'm a Devils fan.
Yeah,
but
we know.
It was the acquisition of Alexander Mogilny that really kind of put the Devils over the edge. Remember,
he's retired. I don't think the Habs can bring him
bring
in.
Bring back Pepe Lemieux.
You know, maybe you know, that guy is Matt Duchene. I'm not sure, but I expect the Habs to be active at the trade deadline.
It's an expensive fit, but I mean, I expect that they're going to be active at the trade deadline too. They just
because
the roster is flawed,
right?
And
they're in win now mode, right?
Sure.
I mean, this isn't a team that is stocked with the type of prospects that the Jets or the Leafs have, right?
That's right.
So if they don't make a move and go for it now, this could be a team that doesn't make the playoffs next year.
Well, wouldn't go that far. They still have Carey Price, assuming he bounces back. But you're absolutely right, and I think you know. Look, I give Mark Bergevin credit for seeing that one of the top three or top five coaches in the NHL is available and not letting loyalty blind him to that fact, because we know how loyal he had been to Michel Therrien.
Yep.
You know, you can argue that maybe PK Subban was traded out and Michel Therrien was kept in, but it's not quite that simple. But he saw Claude Julien on the market and he jumped at him and he got him real quick. Makes you wonder how many other teams were maybe not as quick on the draw as Mark Bergevin and the Canadiens were in acquiring Claude Julien.
I wonder who inquired.
if these walls could talk.
Yeah.
David Pagnotta of the Fourth Period joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Show This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. The Jets, of course, into Montreal on Saturday. 7 a.m. start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, given that it's a 1 o'clock start time in Montreal. So that's a programming note for you. Drew Mandel, Joel Marcoux, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from the Fourth Period, David Pagnotta joins us now. David, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Obviously, David, we're going to take a whip around the NHL and what has been a busy time. It usually is a busy month of February with the trade deadline rapidly approaching. We'll start, though, in Montreal with the news, of course. Claude Julien in as head coach, Michel Therrien out. How surprised were you at the decision of Habs general manager Mark Bergevin? And do you think this decision gets made if Claude Julien isn't made available by the Boston Bruins?
I was surprised. Everybody, I think, was really surprised by the move because there was really no indication that the Canadians were going to go in this direction. And you tried fishing, you tried to, you know, a lot of people wrote about how it needed to happen and was probably going to be the right move, and this was the direction they need to go to start getting them back on track, and ultimately they went in this direction, but it caught a lot of people off guard. What became clear in the last 24 hours has been that the Habs were going seriously considering, you know, a change behind the bench, regardless of whether or not they were going to get permission from the Bruins to speak with Claude Julien or not. You know, of course, Bob McKenzie being the first to put out there that there was some permission that was granted from Florida to talk to, you know, Gerard Gallant, former Panthers head coach, about, you know, taking over the reins. They obviously didn't get to that point because things moved so quickly on a five-year deal with Claude Julien after the season, 5 years after the season. So this is, you know, this was certainly a decision that happened relatively quickly, but something that, you know, you could imagine Mark Bergevin, their general manager, had been contemplating for a while.
Dave, you had an article up on thefourthperiod.com about the Montreal Canadiens and the move that we were just talking about. So what do you think is next for the Montreal Canadiens? We know that they're in win-now mode, so do you see them making that big move?
Well, they're in win now mode, but if it's convenient, that's what it kind of sounds like. I think it's been, and I've said this a number of times over the last few weeks. I've tweeted about it as well. I've written about it that Mikhail Sergachev wasn't somebody that the Canadians have wanted to part with. Doesn't mean that even after Bergevin coming out today and saying that he doesn't want to move him, doesn't necessarily mean that if the right deal comes along that he won't do it. But all indications are that if the Colorado Avalanche, if talks intensify with them about Matt Duchene, for example, that they will not include Sergachev in that type of a deal. I think moving forward for the Habs, they have holes, and it's pretty evident that they've got some holes that they want to fill in order to be a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. And you look at their top six and you go, okay, well, you know, Philip Deneau has done a good job stepping in, subbing in temporarily as a top two centerman, playing alongside Alex Radulov and Max Pacioretty. But with Alex Galchenyuk back in the lineup, with Brendan Gallagher back in the lineup, that's another unit, but you don't have a legitimate left winger on that side. You don't have a legitimate, you know, top two centerman to add to Galchenyuk as part of it. And there's no secret that the Canadians would like to bolster their blue line and bring in a veteran presence on the back end to solidify their defensive core. Yeah. So, you know, three big pieces, that's a lot to work with. I don't know if they're going to be able to maneuver that. I don't know if they're willing. They certainly don't seem willing to give the Avs what they're looking for right now for a guy like Duchene. They don't seem to be willing to overpay for a guy like Martin Hanzel out of Arizona. And Michael Stone, their defenseman, another guy that they've discussed with the Coyotes. So it's wait and see. It's going to the end. And if the prices drop, then the Habs will jump in the mix. They're going to look at other options as well to see what else is out there. They've talked to St. Louis about Patrick Berglund. They've talked to them a little bit about Kevin Shattenkirk. But the prices are high. And until they drop, I don't see the Canadians really making a move for a significant piece. I expect them to make a move or two. I just don't think it'll be for one of the top tier guys unless the price goes down. And really, that you could say that about a lot of teams.
I guess one way to fill those holes is if Carey Price becomes Carey Price again. At least that'll maybe shore up a few other deficiencies. What is the price for a guy like Matt Duchene? Of course, the market hasn't been set at this point, but are we talking the farm here? You know, two, three prospects and a roster piece.
Yeah, it sounds like, defense is the number one thing for the Avs. Now, if they move Gabe Landeskog and Matt Duchene, I don't expect them to get solely defensemen back as part of it. You've got to fill some other spots on the roster. But I think for Duchene, for example, you're looking at either a really, really top-tier prospect who's on the verge of making it in the NHL or a very proven or now proven young defenseman that's, you know, easily can slot into your top two or into your top pairing. That plus another top young prospect and a first round pick. And that's a really hefty price, even though it's Matt Duchene and you know, you kind of give him and Landeskog a bit of a buy and everybody else in Colorado a bit of a buy based on their pretty poor offensive production this season. You look at what they've done in the past, and that's really where the value comes from. At least that's what Colorado is selling it on. So you've got to be prepared to give up those pieces. And if you feel like a guy like Matt Duchene can come in there and be the guy that can step in and help you capture a Stanley Cup this season and perhaps next, then you can afford, or at least make things easier in life for you to justify making that move by giving up some of your future, some significant pieces of your future. I don't see the Canadians paying a premium like a Michael McCarron and a first-round pick for Martin Hanzel. I don't see anybody really doing that. Mm-hmm. But the prices are high, and we've got 2 weeks today till the deadline. They're going to drop, but by how much, you know, obviously we'll wait and see.
David Pagnotta, our guest on NHL This Week. You can see David's work at thefourthperiod.com. David, if a quote, not my quote, the NHL's quote, potentially career-threatening injury and incident warrants a six-game suspension.
Yeah.
What does an on-ice beheading warrant?
7.
What's happening? Basically, the question is, what's happening in the NHL Department of Player Safety?
I don't know. I don't get it. I talked to some people at the league immediately after the incident occurred, and they all admitted that it was bad. This was not good. They were going to review it. They had already looked at it a bunch of times, almost within, a minute of it happening. The guys that I spoke to all said that this was bad. This is not a good thing. Nyquist has claims that he was trying to move his stick around Sturgeon to, retaliate with another cross check. And you kind of buy it a little bit if you really dissect the video and see the butt end of the stick hitting the boards and okay, whatever. But it's not what happened. And, just because you intend to do something and it goes awry, doesn't mean that you get off the hook because of the situation. And I'm saying that because I believe that Nyquist got off the hook with a 6-game suspension in this one. I was expecting, 10, 12 games out of this one. A lot of people were. And even that might be a little lenient. The league certainly didn't do themselves any favors by the explanation they came out based on exactly what you just said. So I don't know. I don't get it. It's a bit of a head scratcher. And then you look at what's happening with Antoine Vermette, and he taps the ref or the linesman, on the side to try to get his attention to say, "Hey, man, what are you doing?" And it could potentially be an automatic 10-game suspension. So I'm confused by the mentality behind the decision process here with Nyquist. Even though it was a mistake, and you get it, I understand that, but in other walks of life, things could go differently, and it's considered manslaughter, and you're still getting in a heck of a lot of trouble. I think that this was something for a guy like Nyquist that they could have made a bit of a better example of, and they failed to do that.
Yeah, Dave, I'm with you on that one. I think Nyquist should have got at least 10 games, if not more than that. You were talking about the trade deadline earlier. Are you expecting this to be a busier trade deadline than last year, or are you thinking that maybe we're going to see less trades than we saw this time last year?
I kind of put it around the same level. I know a lot of people are using the expansion draft as, a bit of an excuse for the possibility of more movement. But keep in mind, teams can still make moves, once the playoffs start. Technically, they can still trade after the trade deadline. Just whoever is traded after that point is ineligible to play for you during the playoffs. Now, I'm not expecting a lot of that to happen, but I suspect we're going to see a heck of a lot of movement in June, probably around the Stanley Cup final and the week after the final before the expansion draft, or even really, I guess, a potential of a 5-day process, because teams have to submit their lists, their protective lists, on the 17th of June by 5 p.m. Eastern. I suspect we'll see more activity then than we would around trade deadline, but I still expect there to be a lot of movement. And I suspect that we're going to see similar to what we saw last year, where trades occur 2-3 days prior to the deadline. A few of them per day leading up to March 1st, where we'll probably be around, 15, 18 type of deals.
Back to coaches for a couple of minutes here. A word around here is that Paul Maurice will likely get an extension at some point during the off season. Put on your executive hat. Does he deserve that extension to you?
I don't think he's done anything to not deserve it. I don't think he's done anything to the opposite of that approach. He's a good coach, and he's proven that throughout the course of his career. I think he's proven that with the Jets. There are a lot of, we talked about some of the holes in the Montreal Canadiens. There are holes on the Winnipeg Jets just the same. And, you can fault the coach so much. The rest of it lies back on some of the players. And you have to be realistic about the situation. If you don't have the goaltender that's getting the job done throughout the season, if you don't have, the secondary scoring in place, if you don't have, the proper amount of team rounded defense to compensate, it all of these things come into play and more. I don't think that Paul Maurice has done anything that would prevent him from sticking around. longer than this season, longer than next season. I don't see any issue with it. I think more so than anything, the team needs to focus on some of the holes, from a management perspective, has to focus on some of the holes that have plagued the team this year. You can use injuries as an excuse for only so long. This is a team that wants to improve its overall talent level. The offense is certainly there, but it's some of the other areas that they need to focus on, goaltending being one of the primaries.
Dave, we've got one last one for you here. There's been a lot of talk about the current NHL playoff format. Travis Yost had a piece up on TSN.ca. I'm not sure if you saw that, talking about the current playoff format and some of the changes that he'd like to see. What are your thoughts on the National Hockey League's current playoff format, and if they do decide to change it, what type of format would you like to see?
I haven't seen Travis's piece yet. I'll definitely take a look afterwards. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, is this the right approach? Is this the right direction? Is this wild card situation working? I'm not overly opposed to it. It's still kind of fresh for me. I had nothing wrong with the 1-8 seed. Like, you know, that was around for so long. I had no issue with it. I kind of don't mind this one. My biggest pet peeve about the current playoff format is that, you know, you could potentially lose out, and we've seen this, some of the better teams in each conference get bounced in the first round because, you know, they get to play a tougher opponent than they traditionally would have. And, you know, if there's a way to remedy that in some form, then I'd be for that. But I'll be honest, I haven't given it too much thought because I haven't been overly concerned about it outside of, you know, every year you could potentially, like, for example, Pittsburgh and Columbus have had tremendous seasons in the Metropolitan Division. If the playoffs started today, one of those two teams is not making it to the second round. I don't know if that's necessarily quote-unquote fair, but, you know, I guess I just kind of roll with the punches when it comes to that sort of thing. Could it be improved? Certainly. But, you know, until they get to that point, and I don't know how in-depth the conversations have gotten yet, if at all. But, you know, you stick with it the way it is, and you kind of roll with it.
David Pagnotta of thefourthperiod.com. David, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks for doing this.
Pleasure as always. Thanks, guys.
Take care, David. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets and the Penguins. They do battle tomorrow night. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Crosby in danger of going three straight games without a point for the first time in a year. Third period action. Gensel plays the give and go with Crosby. Crosby now 1 point away from the magic number of 1K.
Sid the Kid going for 1,000 career NHL points tomorrow night versus the Winnipeg Jets. A game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290. Watch it live on TSN 3 as well. Is it a 6:30 puck drop or a 6 o'clock puck drop tomorrow?
6:30.
Okay, I haven't looked at the schedule.
Or maybe it's 6, actually.
I haven't really looked at that. Hey, I'll double check that. I haven't looked that closely at the schedule. I know it's one of those two times. The 6 o'clock puck drop there tomorrow. Thank you, NHL.com, for filling in my ignorance.
You said Sid the Kid. Is that going to be on his plaque when
Probably.
He goes into the Hockey Hall of Fame? Is that a nickname that just will never, ever leave?
Yeah, it's a stupid nickname because he's clearly not a kid anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, it rhymes, so I think people like that. They like
Soon he's going to be Sid the 30.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't sound the same.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, yes, he's going to be Sid the Kid, but that's just the way, you know, it's unfortunate that he didn't have something more catchy than that as
sure.
He goes for his 1,000th point. The Jets and the Penguins tomorrow night. The Penguins, of course, you know, second in the Metropolitan Division, 7 points behind the Washington Capitals, who are truly running away with that division. Just a couple points up, though, on both the Blue Jackets and the Rangers. Both those teams are just 2 points behind the Penguins now. Penguins 35-13-7 on the season. This is a Penguins team that is just churning along to the playoffs. We talked about them earlier.
Yeah.
They're a dynamic hockey team, and the Winnipeg Jets are going to try and do battle against them tomorrow night with a third pairing defense. featuring Mark Stewart and Paul Postma. And that's a big task for that pairing.
Yeah, guys, we just saw the Jets lose three games in a row at home, and the Pittsburgh Penguins have lost three games in a row. Well, they've only lost three games all season is what I meant to say at home. So it's pretty incredible.
Want to try that again? So the Penguins. So what you're saying is the Penguins have lost three games at home.
I was having a little trouble with that one.
Okay, good.
They have lost three games all year at home, guys, and absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody's going to be surprised if the Pittsburgh Penguins again are competing for the Stanley Cup when it comes around to early June, right? So, I mean, you talk about Evgeny Malkin, and he was out, and the Pittsburgh Penguins didn't miss a beat at all. I think they lost one or two games when Malkin was out with that lower body injury. So, I mean, we know what Sidney Crosby's doing this year. He's Sidney Crosby. He's always up at the top when it comes to the NHL's points leader. So, you know, the big problem with the Penguins this year has basically been they have two good goaltenders now, and Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't been getting as much starts as he was getting last year. So, I mean, this team is still one of the most balanced teams in the NHL, top to bottom. And last year, the moves making acquiring Justin Schultz and Trevor Daley, those were moves that really solidified the depth for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And Chris Letang, again, is a top defenseman in the NHL. So, I mean, you're not going to find that many weaknesses when it comes to the Pittsburgh Penguins. So it's going to be really tough for the Jets. They're going into an arena with a team that just doesn't lose very often at home. And there just aren't very many weaknesses on this Penguins team. Special teams, you know, aren't actually as good as you'd think they would be. It's just a team that scores a lot of goals and doesn't give up a lot of goals. And whether it's Marc-Andre Fleury or Matt Murray in net, this is still, I think, a top team in the league.
Did they bring in Ian Cole last year as well as part of that, the guys that they brought in for Bortuzzo? Yeah. Anyways, you know, it's crazy because we're talking about coaches in the opening segment. You know, look at what Mike Sullivan's done with this team after taking over from Mike Johnson last year in December.
Sure.
I mean, they just went on a tear in the back half of the season, en route to basically steamrolling their way through the playoffs with Chris Letang and spare parts on the blue line with all the injuries that they had, and no Stanley Cup hangover. They've just been rolling since, and that's the part that's the most impressive thing to watch out of this team. They're not stopping, and Sidney Crosby right now, inching close to 30 years old, probably playing the best hockey of his career right now.
The fact that he went two straight games against Colorado and Arizona and didn't score a point, people were stunned at that. Because those are, I mean, two of the worst teams clearly in the league. I think they are the two worst teams in the league statistically. And the fact that Crosby didn't rack up the points and get that 1,000th point while on that road trip, I think people were absolutely blown away about. Yeah. So, you know, he gets that 1 point last night against Vancouver. He gets an opportunity to go for it tomorrow night against the Jets to get the 1,000th. You know, to your point about Mike Sullivan, I think what's so important for this Penguins team is all these guys that they have sort of coming up through their farm system.
Yeah.
He's got familiarity with them.
Exactly.
And he knows them. And so he's, you know, they're able to, you know, relatively seamlessly bring in a guy like Jake Guentzel into their lineup.
Yeah.
Because he played in Scranton Wilkes-Barre with the Penguins farm team.
Last year when they brought in Rust and Sheary and those guys for their playoff run. It's no different than what the Lightning did with John Cooper a couple of years ago, right? And then they injected all these guys from their American Hockey League affiliate. I mean, there is something to be said about developing your coach as well, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. The familiarity that they seem to be, that he has with their players and the way he's able to get them into the lineup is quite impressive. Of course, when you do have, I mean, you know, the coaching is, he's doing a good job. But when it's pretty easy, you would think, to coach for the most part when you have Crosby and you have Kessel and you have Malkin and you have all these, you know, fantastic players and all the trades lately that, you know, remember when Jim Rutherford was hired? And he was brought over from Carolina after pretty much everyone thought his general manager career was almost over. And people were sort of, you know, questioning some of the moves he makes.
Yeah.
And he goes and he gets a guy like Nick Bonino out of Vancouver for Brandon Sutter.
And
he goes and gets a guy like, you know, Carl Hagelin off the scrap heap.
Yeah.
These are, and, you know, Hagelin, of course, out of the lineup right now. These are all moves that have really turned out to be golden moves for the Penguins. Like you said, Ezzy, they're not missing a beat since the Stanley Cup last season. No reason to think that they won't be in the running again to win it this year, except for the fact that they have to go battling through the Metropolitan Division.
Oh, that's going to be a slugfest.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Penguins, if you're the Penguins right now and you're looking at the standings, and we'll talk about the playoff format a little later on in the show. You're the Penguins right now. You got 77 points. The Blue Jackets are 2 points behind you, same number of games played. The Rangers are 2 points behind you. They've played a game more. If you're the Penguins, are you telling me you'd rather not finish in the first wild card spot and have to go through the Atlantic Division rather than have to battle out and play against the Columbus Blue Jackets in the first round with Brandon Dubinsky, who is, you know, whose battles with Sidney Crosby have become legendary? That's, you know, you rather go through a physical series against the Blue Jackets where there's no guarantee you're going to win versus go through try and go through the Montreal Canadiens and then either the, you know, the Bruins or the Senators or the Leafs.
Yeah.
I know which route I'm choosing.
Yeah, and you know, going back to what you said before, Drew, I think it's a good point about the moves that Jim Rutherford made last year, because with the exception of a few minor pieces, this Penguins team is very similar to the team that won the Stanley Cup last year. And one guy that has really impressed me this year, he's leading the Penguins in scoring amongst defensemen, and that's because Chris Letang has been injured for parts of this season. But Justin Schultz is a guy that a couple of years ago we were talking about as being a bust with the Edmonton Oilers, and he's got 39 points right now in 55 games. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy that is perfect for that Penguin system. We know that Mike Sullivan came in there and he identified flaws in the system that they were playing, and now this team is totally built on speed, totally built on transition. And for
defense.
for a guy like Justin Schultz, who's not the best defensively, he's gotten better since he came into the league 5 years ago. But for a guy like that, I mean, that's why he's putting up the numbers that he's putting up, because his type of play is conducive to the system that they play.
You know, you think that it's easy to coach a team loaded with talent like this, but I mean, let's just rewind a few years ago when it was Dan Bylsma. And I just had a flashback of that 13 conference final when they met Boston. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, Claude Julien coaching the Bruins and Dan Bylsma with the Penguins. And the Bees just swept the Pens because they had nothing. They couldn't adjust. And the Bruins had a system and they stuck to it. And then they just stymied a team loaded like the Pens. And that's what Mike Sullivan has done. He's injected a system and squeezing everything that he possibly can out of these players who are rejects for other teams. And he's just, they're adhering to this system, and when executed, that's a pain in the ass team to play against, like we saw them do last year in the playoffs. I mean, who expected them to wipe away the Rangers, the Capitals, just like they did like that?
And I also like some of the role players they have, and I realize that, you know, in today's day and age of analytics, you know, these guys don't get as much play, but Eric Ferris, I was going to say Tom Kunkel's, the Matt Cullens, you know, those veteran guys that can play those roles. Because, I mean, let's be honest here, guys. Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, Letang, I mean, those are the guys that drive the bus offensively, but they have that good supporting cast, those guys that play 10 or 12 minutes that they can put out there on the PK. You remember when the Penguins won the Cup back in 2009, they had guys like Craig Adams and Bill Guerin to play those types of roles, right? Mm-hmm. So this Penguins team, again, I mean, we didn't think Jim Rutherford was necessarily going to be there long term, right, after they let Ray Shiro go.
Yeah.
But he has done a masterful job, in my opinion, building that team around Crosby and Malkin, because that hasn't changed, right? I mean, the only real big move I think they made, aside from acquiring Phil Kessel, was trading Jordan Staal to Carolina, right? So that was a significant move because he was a big part of that 2009 team. But certainly the bigger moves were those pieces that he picked up. Guys, as we talked about, kind of off the scrap heap, the Nick Boninos, the Carl Hagelins, the guys that you didn't really think were going to make a big difference, they made a huge difference because those guys were fast. And as we know, it's all about speed. Just ask Nikolaj Ehlers.
Bill West of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review joins us next to talk more about the Penguins and preview tomorrow night between the Jets and the Pens. You're listening to NHL This Week. Hour number two coming up next on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
pleased to welcome back to the program Bill West. Bill covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Bill, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me again. Always a pleasure.
The pleasure is all ours, Bill. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Penguins ahead of the Jets and the Penguins tomorrow night in Pittsburgh. Sidney Crosby right on the doorstep now of getting 1,000 points on his illustrious NHL career. Are you surprised it's taken him this so long? I mean, I think most people would have said that he would have got it on the road either in Colorado or Arizona, but he happened to go scoreless in those two games.
Yeah, it's a surprise. You know, you look at the quality of the competition there, and you would think that Sid wouldn't have much trouble getting 2 points. But, you know, hockey's funny that way. I'm sure all of your audience is well aware that sometimes the puck luck goes away for a little bit. And, he's trying not to be frustrated. I would say at this point it has probably bugged him a little bit. In fact, he didn't not that he blew off the media, but he didn't talk after the last game despite getting a point. So I think he's ready to have this this countdown over with, and you know, so he can move on with the rest of the points that he plans to get in his career.
Bill, is the most impressive stat for the Penguins right now that they've only lost 3 games all year at home? I mean, that's incredible. The Jets just lost 3 games in a row at home.
It's impressive. You know, I think they've been good at home and on the road. I think if anything, again, it's kind of the luck of hockey to go back to that. I think they've played well enough on the road to probably have a better record there than they do. But part of it is goaltending. Beginning of the year, Marc-Andre Fleury's had an up and down season, and some of their poor performances came on the road with him in net. So, I think they're really just they're a good team that's kind of biding their time and maybe waiting to find that next gear, here in the next probably 2 weeks to really try to, hit the playoffs, but, on a real swing again.
Back to the captain. When you consider the changes in the league in the past decade since he entered, younger, faster, more competitive, is Crosby playing the best hockey of his career right now?
He's probably playing the most nuanced hockey of his career right now. I know that's kind of a lame answer, but I think I'm sure, again, there's a lot of talk of your way about Connor McDavid. There's a lot of talk everywhere about McDavid. He plays so explosively right now, and I think that's the reason why people have begun to question whether he is, equal to Crosby or soon to pass him. And, Sid back in the day, had similar kind of athletic gifts, but now he's going on 30 and, can't quite do all those things that he was able to do as a young 20-something. But, there's just the subtleties of his game are so good now at both ends of the ice. And his ability to find the loose pucks around the net, it's always been, kind of one of his best talents. But I think it's just the skills that come with experience and come with, wisdom. And he's making it look easy, I guess, is the most impressive thing. Again, it's not necessarily like he's doing, going 100 miles an hour, although he still certainly is an excellent skater and strong, all that stuff. But that it's just he's blending the mind and body abilities so well.
Bill West is our guest on NHL This Week. Bill covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Bill, he returned to the lineup last night. That's Evgeny Malkin after missing a handful of games due to the injury. Of course, he missed the All-Star game and was absent in Los Angeles in its entirety as he was not one of the NHL's top 100 players. Certainly many people felt that was an oversight. Sure, Malkin felt the same way as well. Do you get the impression that, while he would probably maybe not admit it publicly, that that's going to be used as a bit of a motivational tool, maybe a bit of a driving force for the remainder of this season?
I'm sure it's something that's in the back of his mind. I think Tino's a pretty smart guy. I think he's able to understand that list was probably a public relations exercise as much as an actual assessment of the 100 best players of all time. And there's a variety of guys that probably deserve to be on there, and they wanted to make it about the past as much as the present, so that's their prerogative. But I think he's always wanted to share the spotlight with Sid, if not claim it outright himself. So I think the fact that Sid was such a gimme, and, you know, certainly be on that list, and that Geno didn't make it. It's probably just one more little notch on the belt, so to speak, of ways that, you know, Malkin is reminded he's still, 1B at best in Pittsburgh. And, I'm not sure he'll ever be able to overcome that. That's the nature of being next to the best player of the generation and the guy that was chosen to be the face of the league for more than a decade now. So, you know, it's Geno's not necessarily petty or, you know, anything like that. But, yeah, it's probably a little extra fuel for the fire.
Bill, I remember last time we had you on back in early December, we were asking you about the goaltending situation with Marc-Andre Fleury and Matt Murray. Now that we're exactly two weeks away from the NHL trade deadline, has anything changed? Do you see the Penguins possibly moving Marc-Andre Fleury, or are they going to keep him for the rest of the regular season and into the playoffs?
If I had to choose, and I don't necessarily have a good feeling one way or the other because the Penguins have just been so hush-hush about it and really not trying to tip the hand in any one way. But I would bet that Fleury stays for the remainder of the season just because Jim Rutherford, the GM, to the degree that he is saying anything, there always seems to be kind of a wink-wink implication about they can find a way to make it work going into the expansion draft, whether it's getting Fleury to waive his no-movement clause or having some arrangement. Rutherford all along has insisted that there are, there's more often than just getting rid of him at the deadline. He's never been a guy who has said, yes, we need to move him by the trade deadline. So I think the fact that he still brings that up and the fact that the Fleury camp, whether it's Marc-Andre himself or his agent, Alan Walsh, if they aren't really raising a stink and saying, hey, this sucks, we want to get out of here, all signs seem to point to the Penguins trying to, have an accommodation where Fleury can go out kind of on his own terms and, potentially still with another Stanley Cup, to his name, even if, he might win it as a backup.
What would be on Jim Rutherford's wish list right now going into the deadline?
Probably the same thing that's on 90% of NHL teams' wish list. I think they would like another top four defenseman. And they've done a really good job of turning guys that weren't viewed, as such into, I guess, options, at least, whether it's Justin Schultz or Trevor Daley. These are guys that have really performed well for the Penguins since they've joined the team. That being said, there's still inconsistency at times, or I guess with Schultz, maybe more so just the question of, can he handle those minutes? Can he handle tougher matchups? Trevor Daley, kind of been an up-and-down situation for him. He is right now not playing in a way that, I mean, instills a lot of confidence that he can handle, with the Capitals, for example, or even Columbus for that matter. I just don't know if they could put him out there in tough situations. So if they can go out and find a defenseman that, is I guess the modern stay-at-home defenseman, maybe some more like Brian Dumoulin that's just kind of a shot suppressor guy. But again, every team in the league would love to have someone with those abilities and that can be trusted in those situations. So I'm not sure Jim Rutherford has a need or something he really is going to be trying to wheel and deal for the deadline. I think he likes the roster as it's constructed, and they'll keep their eyes out there and see what the market is for Fleury or some of the other guys that they have with expiring contracts, whether it's Chris Kunitz, Nick Bonino. Again, if they don't make any big moves and they get past the deadline with the team as is, I think they still really like their chances as a cup contender.
Bill West, our guest on NHL This Week. Bill covers the Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Bill, we were talking about this earlier in the program. You look at the Penguins roster, and they got a few guys who've played, come up through the system, been AHL players down in Wilkes-Barre, and, Jake Guentzel and Scott Wilson and Josh Archibald, and they've been able to come up and they've, contributed to the Penguins lineup. They're not superstars by any stretch, but they've been able to fit into the Penguins lineup. How important is that familiarity that Mike Sullivan has with these guys from his time as the head coach in the AHL for the Penguins to getting these guys to sort of seamlessly fit into the lineup?
I think it is pretty important. Maybe not so much for them even fitting in the lineup as him having trust in them and not, over-managing the situation. There's a lot of emphasis between the Penguins and the Baby Hens and Wilkes-Barre about running the same systems and really just trying to make it as much of a cookie cutter, organization or approach, and so that there's just not a lot of changes in terminology or again, philosophy, anything like that. You're basically, when you come up, they're telling you to do the same exact things you did in Wilkes-Barre. You're just doing it with Sidney Crosby instead of, you know, whoever the center is, you know, the in the AHL team. So you know, that part is easy. And then with Sullivan, the fact that he knows these guys, knows their strengths, it just allows him to plug them in and they go. You know, he says, listen, I know this is what you do well. You're fast, or you know, you're a good forechecker, you're a shot blocker, or whatever it might be. You know, go do that. Do the same thing here. I'm going to trust you with 8 minutes a game, 10 minutes a game, whatever it might be, and you know, you just go out there and do your job. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of second guessing on Sullivan's part. And I think for the players, they understand where they are in Sullivan's book, so to speak. I don't think too many of them go with the illusion that they're going to completely change Sullivan's impression or you know, thoughts on them. So it's just kind of, it's good that there's a basic groundwork when they get there, and there's not a whole lot of guessing on either side.
Bill, just one last question for you. We know that Penguins left winger Connor Sheary is not going to play for the Pens tomorrow night when the Jets come to town. He went down with that upper body injury 2 weeks ago, and at the time they said he'd be out 4 to 6 weeks. Is he still on track to come back in that time frame?
Yeah, that's our understanding. He started skating on his own. He just got on the ice a couple days ago for the first time. So, you know, obviously encouraging that he's moved to that phase of the recovery and rehab program. Still a ways to go. You know, he'll have to get back involved with practice on a non-contact you know, level, and then presumably we'll start working in contact drills. But yeah, for now he's a missing piece, and the Penguins have certainly done a good job, as you talked about a little bit ago. They have other options, you know, at the AHL level, that they've tried to, you know, plug in and fill that void. But it's been a tough loss for him. Sheary really thinks the game at a very high level and impressed a lot of people in the media and the team, wherever, with how well he clicks with Crosby. So they're certainly eager to get him back.
Bill West covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Bill, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Our pleasure. When we come back, we'll discuss the NHL current playoff format. Is it time to maybe reevaluate things? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
It sucks, obviously. Sometimes you just feel you win the President's Trophy, but you see the schedule in the playoffs is kind of weird because you play first team in fourth and then you play against Pittsburgh. Not like if you like Islanders or different teams play against each other. Sometimes you think, why you need to win President's Trophy to play against the best team, you know. You start thinking about it and you just, you know, it's kind of weird, man.
That was back in September. That's Alex Ovechkin talking about the current playoff format in the NHL, expressing his displeasure with it, which of course sees the playoffs begin in the in-division format.
I like, by the way, how Rory had 50 mission cap by the tragically hit plane in the background there. You know, talking about, you know, the Leafs and their cup drought.
Bill Barilko.
And they're losing 3-0 to Columbus tonight.
You really were able to... That was a hell of a
couple of layers
link
to that
there.
One.
I mean,
well, we're talking about the Capitals. You know, they're trying to win that elusive first ever Stanley Cup.
Would you like to play 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon on air too while you're at
maybe.
It? Okay, I was never good at that game. I was never good at movie trivia either. Anyways, this segment of the program brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So, gentlemen, the NHL's playoff format has, of course, been in its current manner since 2013-14 when they went back to the divisional format.
Yeah.
Meaning first place, the top two teams, the top team in each division, the team that has the best record, most points, plays the lowest of the two wild card teams. The other divisional winner plays the first wild card team, and then 2-3 each play in division. This year, if you currently look at the NHL's Eastern Conference, and you look at it on a conference way, not looking at it by the division way, the Washington Capitals should play the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round. That's fine. That's probably going to happen right now if the playoffs were to start today. The problem begins with 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
The second, third, and fourth place teams in the Eastern Conference are all members of the Metropolitan Division. Even the Capitals, I should say, are also a member of the Metropolitan Division.
The top four teams in the East are all Metro.
Yes, which means that one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference is going to be eliminated long prior to the Eastern Conference Finals. Is it time for the NHL to either scrap the current playoff format and go back to the 1-8, 2-7, 3-6, 4-5?
Yes, 100%.
What about, is there a hybrid format that you could foresee maybe them coming up with?
No, the top eight teams, points-wise, should get into the playoffs.
Absolutely.
I don't think we need complicate
with no
this.
Reward for winning a division?
No, well, that's the other thing that I don't like either. Well, if you go back to 2002, the Carolina Hurricanes, they won the Southeast. And had they not won the Southeast, they would have been eighth place. So they finished third. So basically, you're giving the incentive to win the division, but if the division isn't that good.
Right. Like,
which is what we saw with the Southeast division for so many years.
And that's why, look where the Pittsburgh Penguins are right now, right? Drew, you just mentioned they're second in the East with 77 points. But because Montreal is the division leader with 70 points, they're second place.
And they get home ice.
To me, it's absolutely ridiculous. By the way, Montreal's played three more games than the Penguins, so the Penguins would probably be, you could argue, closer to 80 points right now.
Sure.
But they're still 7 points higher than the Habs.
Yeah.
So as far as I'm concerned, it's ridiculous that the Pittsburgh Penguins would not seed second, because as far as I'm concerned, they are a top two team in the East, points-wise or roster-wise. But, come on, guys. If you remember, that was the first year the Jets were in the Central Division, too, because the first 2 years they were in the Southeast.
Right.
So the first 2 years
this is right after the last lockout or whatever, and they realigned and everything else. And they said, I think at the time, is they wanted to encourage divisional rivalries.
Plus, you can make a bracket this way.
Yeah, and anybody who...
The Americans like the brackets.
I don't buy that argument.
No, I don't buy it either. I'm just saying.
Yeah, the NHL might like the bracket argument, but anybody who thinks that all of a sudden the NHL playoffs are being treated like March Madness, it ain't happening.
Yeah, but you know what, Drew? That argument that they wanted to create divisional rivalries, you want to see the best teams go far in the playoffs, and they should be rewarded for having... If you play 82 games and you finish second in your division, but because the team in the other division has more points, you actually finish lower. I think that's ridiculous.
Congratulations, right? You had a great year in your division, and your reward, you get to play a division rival.
Right. Well, and under
so
this
last
format,
year, Chicago, St. Louis, first round.
And under this format, Joel, they're going to end up playing a better team, right?
Like we spoke about earlier in the program, the Penguins right now are scheduled to play the Columbus Blue Jackets in the first round. And that is the second best team in the conference playing against the third best team in the conference.
Remember, that's who they played 3 years ago.
Yeah, and it was a hell of a series.
Yeah. Columbus surprised a lot of people.
Because they took it to six games.
And hey, I'm not saying that that's not going to be another great series, and that's probably going to go to six or seven games. But
that's a great series we should see in the Eastern Conference final, though.
Maybe.
Or the Eastern Conference semifinal, not necessarily the first round.
I think most people want to see Pittsburgh and Washington in the Eastern Conference final.
You should be able to see two teams from the Metropolitan Division play each other in the conference finals, not necessarily in the division finals.
Well, and Joel, I think it's ridiculous that only five teams can make it from a division.
Well, that's exactly...
If you have six teams that have more points than the other teams in the other division, let them make the playoffs. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I think they should go back to the top eight teams in each conference get in.
Which you have to rewind a long time for that, because even you go back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it was still division leaders.
Division winners get that guaranteed spot.
Like Joel, and if you look at baseball, I think the wild card in baseball is great. You're not gonna get an argument from me for scrapping that wild card in baseball. But as far as the NHL goes, I don't think it works. I really don't.
You don't like the wild card in baseball?
In hockey, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I just don't understand.
I like it in baseball.
Yeah.
They've been doing this for 3 years now. Have any new rivalries been created as a result of this format? Anything better than what we saw previously when there was the 1-8 situation and 2-7? I mean, the biggest rivalry, the biggest bloodbath, the biggest hatred on ice that I can remember in the last 5 years was when the Penguins and the Flyers were playing each other back in 2012.
Yeah.
If you remember that 2012 playoff series.
Sure. Every game finished 8-6.
Yeah.
With four players on the bench because everyone else had been kicked out.
Yeah.
That was done not in a division rivalry situation. That was just done because of two teams that didn't like each other.
Yeah. And Drew, to your point, the Jets' biggest rival might be a team that's not even in their own division. When they played the Ducks the first time they made the playoffs, that's turned into a really good rivalry. We've heard, how much Jets fans hate Corey Perry and Ryan Kessler, probably because they're two of their top players, but... I don't even know that the Jets' best rivals are in their own division.
Well, you don't feel as though there's any blood, there's any blood feud, that there's any, a real, they're competitive against a lot of the teams in their own division, but do you get the impression that anybody hates each other in the Central Division?
No, Central Division or not, the Hawks and Blues have been rivals for a long time.
Sure.
Same thing with the Wild.
Right.
Go in the other side of the West. I mean, just because they have this new Pacific Division, the Kings and Sharks were always rivals.
Well,
same thing with the Ducks.
Joel, you could take this even further and just say scrap divisions and just have conferences.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure what the purpose of the unbalanced schedule is, aside from maybe making travel a little bit easier on some of the teams. That would be what I would imagine is, I mean, they have it in baseball, too. They have these unbalanced schedules where they play way more games in division than they do against all the other
teams.
And
by the way, Drew, they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do that. And I think I think travel is a big function of that.
And that's why all the major leagues have divisions. But as far as I'm concerned, I mean, why does it have to be complicated? Like, the top eight teams in each conference, at the end of the season, whoever of the eight teams that have the highest amount of points, then you rank them according to where they finish.
Well, I agree with you. I think I'd even go a step further. I mean, if they're going to try and do things that are sort of radical, I mean, I think it's time for them to do things that are truly reward a team for finishing atop a conference after 82 games. Right now, the reward is what I would describe as marginal.
Sure, and if you want to go back to pre-2013-14, Drew, then sure, give the team that finishes the highest in the standings the option of picking their opponent or something like that.
Well, that's something that both Eric Tkachuk has been an advocate of for a lot of years. I think that's a great idea. That is, I think, a radical suggestion. And so what are you talking
about?
Choose your own adventure.
Like, think
you
about
finish
it, guys.
First overall in your conference. You have the following seven teams that you get to choose from as your first-round opponent. Why not? That's how you create rivalries. And that's how you create a blood feud.
That's billboard material.
And sure, there might be a little bit more travel involved, but these guys play, when you're talking about, playoffs, the first round of the playoffs stretches over so many days anyways that they're playing, two games every 5 days. It's not like they're overwhelming themselves with the games.
Yeah.
That's how you create a rivalry, in my perspective. That would be something that would be fun.
I really agree with Travis Yost here, because when you're talking about Pittsburgh and Columbus, they have more points than the Montreal Canadiens. If you think about it, the Montreal Canadiens are being rewarded for actually how poorly they've been playing in the last couple months,
well, they're being rewarded for playing and for having played well in a decidedly average division.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, Drew? If the Montreal Canadiens had 80 points right now and they had the second most points in the Eastern Conference, okay, great. I get that.
Sure.
But when you have a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins who's clearly better,
think about it back to when the Jets made the playoffs 3 years ago. What was another first-round playoff matchup? Was Calgary against Vancouver.
Yeah, so if the Jets won their series, they would have gotten the winner of the Calgary-Vancouver one based on the bracket.
Yes, and none of those...
The Jets probably would have gone to the Cup that year.
Well, they would have won. They would have come out of that. They could have beaten Calgary or Vancouver pretty easily because Vancouver rolled over for the Flames, and then the Ducks steamrolled them because the Ducks were clearly a better team. But Calgary and Vancouver 3 years ago was the most insulting first-round matchup we've seen in a while, probably until we see Ottawa and Toronto or Ottawa and Boston playing later this spring.
Go back to the old format, Drew.
I agree wholeheartedly. Josh Smith from Scouting the Refs joins us next. Lots to talk about when it comes to NHL officiating and abuse of officials. He joins us next on NHL This Week.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. We'll be right back.
Bottom of the hour, Wednesday, the 15th of February. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Josh Smith from scoutingtherefs.com. Josh, certainly been a busy time for the NHL and its officials. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to join you. And no shortage of ref activity these days.
Yes, no shortage whatsoever. We'll start with Gustav Nyquist in Detroit. Gets 6 games for high-sticking Jared Spurgeon. The NHL comes out and says that it could have been a career-threatening injury or a career-threatening incident, yet they only give him 6 games. Justify that decision for me, if you can.
I cannot. I will say that right up front. I will. You know what, though? Let me back up, because this is what they've set with precedents and decisions in the past. You look at an incident like the Duncan Keith, I'll call it an attack, getting 6 plus a playoff game. When you get something that's intentional, when you get a guy who's looking another guy in the face and hitting him in the face with his stick, I think it deserves more than it got. But this is what the NHL has done in the past. This is what their past decisions have led to. So I'm not at all surprised that it was 6 games. I figured we'd be in the 5 to 6 range there. I was actually pleasantly surprised to see there was an in-person hearing, that he wasn't going to skate for less. But when you look at the intent, and I've heard his explanation that he was intending to get his stick around to cross-check, but instead of getting the stick around, he caught him in the face. It's still a retaliation. What it comes down to me is, anytime you're jabbing a guy or spearing a guy in the face, the potential for injury has to be weighed in more than the actual injury, I think. You look at the intent, you look at what could have happened, and just because Spurgeon was lucky to get away without serious injury, you can't put that in Nyquist's favor and go easy on him because of a fortunate break. That could have ended Spurgeon's career, and I think it should have been penalized more harshly.
All right, Josh, let's get right into the situation with Antoine Vermette from Tuesday night's game, the Anaheim Ducks center, of course. Do you think that the linesman in that game handled the situation properly? Shandor Alfonso is the linesman's name. Have you ever seen anything like that at the NHL level, and did you think that Antoine Vermette deserved to be suspended for 10 games?
I think he deserved the suspension. I think there were definitely things that led up to it. Frustrating game for Anaheim. The penalties were one-sided. And I'm not going to say it wasn't deservedly so. You know, but when you look at the score sheet and you see that it was a one-sided penalty affair, even if they deserved it, it does build on you. It gets frustrating. Maybe not the best drop, but if you go back and watch, Vermette was cheating throughout the game. He was trying to get in there a little bit early. I think with all of that, you still have to remember that officials are off limits. It might not have been a hard shot. It certainly wasn't one with intent to injure. But anytime a player is swatting an official with a stick, you got to call that by the book.
We have the ability to scrutinize these officials incessantly now with reviews and everything. If these officials are judged by their performance, can a review-filled game get them in trouble by their superiors?
I think it's going to depend on what the reasons are. There are probably situations that go without reviews that the supervisors are very critical of how things could have been handled differently or how a certain call went. There's other times when it's a tough situation. It's one that you can see necessitates review, or it's such a close call or a gray area call. There are offsides calls every night that we see that are challenged that you can take a look at and say, there's no way. You know, this is a coach making a desperation move, or he's going to get some extra time for an extra long timeout by challenging this. And then there are the ones that are right on the line that, you know, I can't fault the linesman for the call. I can fault the process for how long it takes sometimes. But it's a great question, and I think it depends on why it's being reviewed.
Josh Smith from scoutingtherefs.com is our guest on NHL This Week. Josh, the anniversary passed about 3 weeks ago. Little fanfare. Nobody really noticed it as far as I can tell. That's, of course, the Dennis Weidman hit from last year on linesman Don Henderson. You know, is that incident water under the bridge? Or are there still lingering resentment over how that was handled? Maybe not so much by the NHL, but by the NHLPA and by the arbitrator who lessened Weidman's suspension.
You know, I think for both sides, I think for the NHLPA fighting for their guy and the NHL fighting for their officials, I think both sides did more or less what they had to do. I think the arbitrator in that situation obviously was let go by the league after that call because of their belief that he overstepped what he was supposed to be ruling on. I think he left both sides looking good in each other's eyes, that the NHL stuck up for their officials, the Players Association stuck up for their player, and it was the arbitrator who ultimately softened that suspension and pulled it back from the 20 games. I still think 20 games is what Weidman deserved. You know, I know you can't go back and punish the guy for the length of injury, but with Weidman, it personally pains me to see him out there skating, knowing that he's probably put an end to the career of an excellent linesman. And you know, he's out there playing, and Henderson may never take the ice again.
Josh, not too long ago, the NHL made offside something that a coach can challenge on a goal. Of course, video review being the challenge. As far as a linesman's job in the NHL goes and calling offside as a play, how has that changed, in your opinion, since the NHL made that a reviewable, I guess if you want to call it, offense, that is, if it was actually an offside play? And what do you think of the rule in general of that being something that can be challenged?
Well, I think it's frustrating for a lot of people, but there was a desire to, you know, to put these in place. It's up to the officials. They want to get the call right. And if this is the process that we're giving them and these are the tools we're giving them to make the right call, then, you know, as far as everyone I've talked to, they're on board with, you know, doing whatever they need to do, whatever they feel is the right approach to making the right call. When it comes to their job, these guys aren't. And I know I've seen some fans and some writers, you know, call them out and say, well, just let them play. We can always catch the offside in review. They're not changing their approach. They're calling it as they see it. They're making the best determination. They're not relying on replay to make the call for them. And I think that's the best way that they can do it. They're going about the calls as if replay didn't exist. And if the coach wants to challenge it and they get a second look, we've seen there are times when goals are taken away as a result of it, and those will happen. Hopefully it's the ones that are close enough that you wouldn't reasonably expect somebody to make that call in real time without replay in multiple angles. But I think their approach in the game action is exactly the same as it's always been. There's just that extra step to challenge their real-time assessment.
Josh, sort of along those same lines, what are your thoughts on the possibility of the NHL changing the offside rule so that your skate doesn't necessarily have to be on the ice, but that it's more on the breaking the plane of the blue line, similar to scoring a touchdown in the NFL where the ball just has to break the plane of the goal line?
I think there's a lot of logic behind it. I don't know that it's going to necessarily make it easier, but I think from a review standpoint, it does. Because if you've got those cameras on the goal line and you're looking straight down the blue line, you're still going to have those judgment calls of a foot in the air and was it over the line or was it behind the line? So once again, we're relying on the cameras. I do think those situations may be fewer than was his skate on the ice or was it half an inch above the ice? With offside being a black and white rule where either you are or you aren't, there's always going to be that, you know, how close of a threshold or how far off are we going to allow? And there's always going to be those calls where even if it's a plane, you know, did his skate break the plane? Do we have the right angle to tell? I think you will see fewer calls, you know, overturned with that, but that remains to be seen. I'm certainly glad they're exploring it.
If you had the power to implement one rule change, maybe adding a new one or getting rid of an old one, what would it be?
Number one, hands down, let's get rid of the trapezoid.
Amen, Josh.
I think that's the first one that I'd get rid of, even before changing coaches challenge or other things. You know, let's let these guys do their jobs. And, you know, putting arbitrary lines on the ice to tell a goaltender he can't perform one of his tasks or one of his skills in a certain section of the ice, I think it's ridiculous. And I think that's the most obvious one to get rid of.
Josh, we'll let you go on this last question. It's going back a couple weeks. Brad Marchand was involved in two slewfoot incidents in the span of, I believe it was either 3 or 4 games. He managed to avoid suspension for both incidents, for either incident. How surprised were you that Marchand was able to avoid suspension for what looked like two pretty clear-cut slewfoots?
I was very surprised. You know, there have been some other hits that have come up that player safety has ruled to be clean hits, where we saw a couple headshots or, you know, some dangerous hits in there that I can understand. I can see that it was a north-south hit and there was a collision. Marchand, he's made a habit of getting away with things. And in both cases, you saw him get a guy from behind in the neutral zone with the play far in the zone and just take a guy's feet out from underneath of him. It's a dangerous play. It's a sneaky play. It's one that, frankly, there's no place for it in the game, and it's not a hockey play. And those are the things that I think the league needs to make sure they work to get out, because when you have dangerous things that aren't actually part of the play, they're not part of the action, like a spear to the face or like a slew foot in the neutral zone with the puck deep in the zone, somebody's going to get hurt, and there's no value, no redeeming quality to what he did on those plays.
One last one, Josh, sort of along those same lines, and you say that, you know, the league, it seemed like the league had been taking positive steps to either increase suspensions for on-ice infractions, yet this year seems like a step back. Do you believe that there's been some sort of, obviously not public, but maybe a private edict behind the scenes to maybe allow a little bit more in terms of the way of infractions? Because from just an anecdotal perspective, it seems like suspensions are down this season, yet incidents that would raise your eyebrows seem to be in a similar vein to previous years.
Yeah, I agree that the number does feel like it's lower. I haven't actually, you know, crunched the numbers to see where we're at. It does feel that way. I don't know if it's more of what player safety has done or more of what we're all expecting to see, especially with, you know, the Marchand plays or the the Scheifele hit or things like that, where everyone's clamoring to say, yeah, this should be a suspension. And in some cases, people are calling for a suspension, and it is a clean hit. I think we're all looking for suspensions right after a big hit, and sometimes they're warranted and sometimes they're not. One thing I will say, I think player safety has really leaned on their own past decisions when it comes to what to do moving forward. And I think a great illustration is, in this case, you know, when we're looking at the Nyquist high stick, they painted themselves into the corner with, this is what we did for Keith, this is the most we can do going forward, which is why 6 games is always going to be the maximum.
Josh Smith covers the world of the NHL from the officiating point of view. You can read more of his work at scoutingtherefs.com. Josh, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Always. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Josh. Let's head to break. When we return, we'll do a score update, one final segment, some trade rumors from around the league as we are 2 weeks away from the trade deadline. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
What do you think this team needs? It's easy to say go get a top 6 score, but you still have to find.
Yeah, did you see what they want for Duchesne and stuff? Oh my God. It's going to be silly because there's so many competitive teams, especially in our conference. I mean, from bottom to top, if I was even at the bottom, I'd still have hope. I think he'll be way too expensive, and we're not going to jeopardize our future.
That's Ottawa Senators owner Eugene Melnyk pretty much pouring any cold water on the possibility of the Senators being an active participant in the upcoming NHL trade deadline. 2 weeks away from tonight is the deadline. Of course, we will be on air with a trade deadline review show That's at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, March the 1st.
Why is he talking?
I don't know, but it's pretty entertaining. Yeah. I was a little bit, I was wondering the same. Yeah. He's an outspoken owner. You hear a lot from Eugene Melnyk, and he doesn't, you know.
Even though he's away most of the time, right?
But yeah, he's out, you know, somewhere in the Caribbean, I think. But he's sort of he's an interesting dude, I think. And he certainly was honest in that clip, so it's always nice to hear it. Should make mention that this final segment of this Wednesday's edition of NHL This Week, it's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Just announced he's coming in 2 weeks' time, Jay Farrow from Saturday Night Live. All the shows were sold out, so they added another show Thursday night, March 2nd, tickets available to see Jay Farrow. Go to RumorsComedyClub.com. That's a 10:30 p.m. show. So if you missed out on buying them initially, another show added. Not only do you get to see Jay Farrow there on Thursday, March 2nd at 10:30 p.m., you also get to see the one and only Ezra Ginsberg, who's going to be in attendance at that show.
Yeah, I think, Drew, you want to encourage people to buy tickets. I don't think
you're not.
You don't
want
to discourage people, Drew.
No, of course I always want to encourage people. Just for the record, you're not performing. You're just going to be in the audience watching Jay Farrow.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a big fan of Jay Farrow, Drew. You know how big of a SNL fan I am. So, yeah, I picked up tickets, and Naomi and I are going to go.
Yeah.
And I'm very pumped up. I don't know, you know, how much SNL you guys watch, but Jay Farrow, he's not a cast member anymore, but he's probably one of the best impersonators out there, I think. He's done guys like Jay-Z and Drake and Barack Obama. So definitely pumped up about that one, Drew.
Yeah, so you can check that out. Tickets available at RumorsComedyClub.com. Anyways, so while Eugene Melnyk was not, you know, enthusiastic about the upcoming trade deadline, a lot of chatter surrounding Curtis Lazar of the Ottawa Senators. He's a healthy scratch for a fourth straight game on Tuesday night. A lot of talk that his agent, J.P. Barrie, sat down with Pierre Dorion and that they might request a trade from a young player for the Senators that they had a lot of high hopes for. Things just haven't worked out well in Ottawa for Curtis Lazar. He'd be an interesting name at the trade deadline. The problem is, if you're the Senators, you'd be trading a diminished asset at that point in time, and I don't think you're going to get a ton from him right now.
Yeah, if you guys remember, Curtis Lazar was a captain for Canada at the World Juniors. And,
that's right.
You know, they've given him a lot of opportunities here, and he hasn't quite translated the success that he had in junior over to the NHL level. And, you know, if he does request a trade, I'm sure there's going to be teams that'll take a flyer on a guy like Curtis Lazar. He's a good, solid player, but is he a top six guy or is he more of a third line guy? And, you know, he's still young. He's in his early 20s here. But that would be an interesting one, because if you look at some of the teams and what they're after, I mean, Curtis Lazar could be a guy that, you know, you plug on the third line, but I'm not sure, you know, what you get for Curtis Lazar, because as you mentioned, Drew, he's been a healthy scratch, so he's a bit of a diminished asset, but I do think there would be some appetite. And, you know, when you talk about the Senators, I think they're a perfect team to make some moves here. I mean, they're a team that, sure, they've got some good young pieces, but this is a team that wants to go far in the playoffs, and they've surprised some people. I thought that the Senators would have a good shot at being a playoff team this year, so we know that they're set in goal and pretty solid on defense. So maybe you look at moving a Curtis Lazar.
What has this kid done to really, you know, has he earned the right to say, I don't want to be here?
No, certainly not. He's got, I mean, his performance this year is, he's got all of 1 point in 29 games.
Yeah, they're giving him opportunities. They brought him in as a young guy. I mean, is he unwilling to buy into what they're telling him to do? Does he think a change of scenery is going to help him? I mean, he hasn't exactly shown us anything to make him worth.
You're saying that he should, you know, stop complaining and work harder. This is a guy who was a 17th overall pick back in 2013.
But it's different when you're, you know, in the first round pick coming in at a young age and you pot 30 goals right out of the gate there, and you can kind of, you want that trade and you want out. Then other teams are saying, oh, look at this guy. What has he really done? And here he wants out.
I mean, he went in his rookie year, he had 15 points.
Right on.
You know, average. Last year he had 20 points. Average. This year, 1 point. So, I mean, he's certainly fallen off a cliff, But
is he unwilling to put on the hard hat and grab the lunch bucket and just get at it?
I think that's what the senators would say, is that the senators don't think that his work ethic has been there, and his consistency clearly hasn't been
there.
When things
get tough, ask for a trade.
Well, that's certainly not – he certainly wouldn't be unique in that front.
And we know that the senators have a bunch of talented players here, guys, but, I mean, it's not for lack of opportunity why Curtis Lazar – I mean, there's every opportunity for him – I should say that there was every opportunity for him, if they do end up moving on from Curtis Lazar, the Curtis Lazar era, former first round pick
era.
1 point in 29 games is
hard
that's,
to do.
That's awful.
That's hard to do. I mean, that's sort of difficult to do.
Yeah, usually you'd have one go off your shin pads at least, or maybe one off your arse, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Tip one in.
I mean, but if the Senators are trading him, I'm not sure, who's going to give up anything for him?
Andrew, you look at where the Senators are at, and, Mike Condon has done an excellent job with Craig Anderson dealing with the situation with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see the Senators maybe trying to get, a top four defenseman, but as we talked about earlier, those do not grow on trees. So maybe you'd get a depth defenseman. Yeah. Earlier in the season, we saw the Senators acquire Tommy Wingles from San Jose. So he's a third line grinder, fourth line grinder. So I got to say, I really like the Senators team. Not a lot of people are talking about them. The Jets play them this weekend, but yeah. I mean,
they've been in a playoff spot pretty much all season.
And Drew, I'm not saying that the Senators are going to upset one of the top Eastern Conference teams in the first round, but I'm just saying I really like how they're built, and I could see this team.
But as we discussed earlier in the show, by playing in the Atlantic Division,
right,
they could be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yep.
They just have to be two, what I would describe as completely average teams to get there. And so it'll be interesting. And, of course, Dean Brown, Ottawa Senators play-by-play man, will join us Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show to talk more about the Senators as the Jets and the Sens meet on Sunday for the first time this season. Amanda Stein will also join us on Saturday to talk about the Habs as we get set for the Jets and the Habs. Remember, that's a 1 o'clock puck drop on Saturday afternoon, meaning it's an early Illegal Curve, 7 a.m. on Saturday morning. A quick look-see at the out-of-town scoreboard before Rory hits the music. In Columbus, the Blue Jackets are up 4-1 on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And in Detroit, the St. Louis Blues, the red-hot St. Louis Blues, they're up 1-0 on the Detroit Red Wings at the end of 20 minutes. Still to come tonight, Philadelphia at Calgary and Florida at San Jose.
I think this is the year, Drew, that the Red Wings streak finally comes to an end, unfortunately.
It clearly looks to be that way.
They haven't drafted top 10 since 91.
Well, I think this year that'll be different. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Big thanks to our guests on tonight's show, Josh Smith from Scouting the Refs, Bill West from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, and David Pagnotta from the Fourth Period. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes, and you can subscribe to the show there as well. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Big props to producer Roy for doing the great job behind the board. For Joel Marcoux, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 7 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.
As long as we stick together, the team will be all right.